Welcome to Update One, the podcast of the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Update One provides a forum for listeners to learn about national stories focusing on news, politics, and current events. Now, the latest edition of Update One.
I'm Adam Cano, and joining me to discuss the upcoming solar eclipse and other space news is Irene Klotz. Irene is a longtime wire service reporter specializing in space and science, who is now space editor at Aviation Week and Space Technology. She joins us by phone from Cape Canaveral, Florida. Hello, Irene.
Hi, Adam.
So remind us exactly what a solar eclipse is and how common are they?
Solar eclipses actually occur like every 18 months, but because the Earth is mostly water and a lot of uninhabited land, they don't often hit any particular place on the planet. What happens is the moon passes between Earth and the sun, so the shadow of the moon falls on Earth. This one is different because it is going clear across the country, and that hasn't happened in 99 years.
So you say clear across the country. Where exactly will this eclipse be visible, weather permitting?
It will be visible from Oregon all the way through to South Carolina. It takes about a little bit more than 90 minutes for the shadow to race across 2,500 miles.
And what do you think makes this eclipse particularly newsworthy? It seems to be getting more publicity than other ones that I can think of.
Social media. I think this eclipse is the first to happen with the way our society and, you know, the world is with interconnectedness and social media and participation in events. So there aren't any specific numbers of how many people are going to see the eclipse or try and drive and be in the path of totality, but the NASA scientists and other people, National Highway Safety and Park Services, are predicting just millions and millions of people. So there's also a lot of opportunities for individuals to participate, not just on their Facebook and Twitter and everything else they use, but there's actually some organized projects. Google is sponsoring something called Mega Movie along with UC Berkeley, where people can upload images, and NASA has many citizen science projects as well. So I think it's just an opportunity for people to participate. And there's been a big outreach to make people aware that it's happening.
Yeah, you talked about sort of non-scientists being involved in Google and things like that. But can you talk a little more about the science side? Because obviously the eclipse is not just a natural phenomena. You know, it is a scientific opportunity as well.
It is. The scientists are super excited. There are instruments that are on satellites and on telescopes to create artificial eclipses. But to protect the optics and for other reasons, the artificial occulters tend to block out more than just the face of the sun. So the moon, no one can really explain why this is, but the moon is 400 times the diameter, smaller than the diameter of the sun, but it's also 400 times closer to Earth. So they align perfectly. And during the eclipse, the outer atmosphere of the sun called the corona, which is like this wispy, pearly, beautiful light I hope to see for myself on Monday, shines through. And that region of the sun is very puzzling because that scientists have known for a long time that the corona is millions of degrees hotter than the surface of the sun, even hotter than the nuclear fusion that's going on inside the sun. And they don't really know why. And the atmosphere of the sun is what creates some of the storms and some of the effects on satellites and everything. One of the NASA scientists said something quite poetic the other day. She said that we actually live in the atmosphere of the sun. And during an eclipse, you have this opportunity to kind of make this direct connection by seeing it with your naked eyes for yourself.
Is it too late to make plans if people haven't decided what they're going to do for the eclipse?
No, it's it's not too late to make plans, but definitely make a plan. In the end of July, there was a gentleman who serves as a science committee on the NASA Advisory Council, and he called it, he said, to be prepared for the zombie apocalypse on I-95. So you can make a plan, and there are like 20 national parks, there's a lot of trails, there are dozens and dozens of libraries and zoos and all kinds of places that are hosting eclipse events. NASA has a great website, and the American Astronomical Society has a great website which lists a lot of these events just by region. You can just go on and click and see what's going on. But definitely, you know, make a plan.
The eclipse reminds us that we're on a planet and we're flying through space, but we also leave the planet to explore space. What are some of the other interesting projects that are underway currently in terms of space science?
Well, I just got back from interviews at Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California, where they're preparing for the end of the Cassini mission at Saturn. That's been going on since 2004, just produced phenomenal results, including a very big surprise that one of the small moons of Saturn, Enceladus, has jets of like salty water, which of course isn't water, it's frozen, and in gaseous form blasting out from inside the planet, or inside the moon, where there's believed to be an ocean. So that's kind of the next, in science, I think that's probably the next milestone this year. There's also in Florida, SpaceX, one of the companies that's in the commercial launch business, is preparing to debut their heavy lift rocket, a 27-engine version of the rocket that they've been flying since 2010. So that's another thing that's kind of happening that we've been keeping our eyes on.
How did you become a space reporter, and why have you stayed with the beat so long?
So kind of on a fluke, I was a copy editor at Florida Today newspaper in Brevard County, which is the home base for Kennedy Space Center. And this was started a few months after the Challenger accident. And it was just really interesting what was going on there. So I edited a lot of stories about the accident, the investigation, and the paper. After a year or so, I switched to business writing. And after the Challenger accident, the U.S. space policy removed commercial payloads from the shuttle. So there were a bunch of companies with this galling idea to make use of decommissioned missile parts and get access to the Air Force launch pads to fly everything, that they had these crazy business ideas. And it was just fascinating. And then before the shuttles resumed flying in 1988, the newspaper started space as a department. So we had four writers and an editor, and the universe was our beat. And it just kind of progressed from there. Never was a plan, just always something amazing going on. I switched to writing for UPI, worked with Discovery Channel for a long time, with Reuters for quite a while, and now with Aviation Week.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that, but before I do, you mentioned the Challenger disaster. I still remember, I found out about that. I was a high school senior. I had just missed the previous Columbia launch because it had been delayed, and I had to come back to school for the spring semester of my senior year. And I found out about the Columbia disaster walking into an astronomy midterm exam. It's just remarkable. You talked about UPI and Reuters and Discovery, different places you've worked. So now you're with Aviation Week and Space Technology, you know, premier trade publication. How is it to shift from writing for UPI and Reuters and mainstream, other examples of mainstream media, to now writing for a trade publication like Aviation Week and Space Technology?
I don't know that it's really that much of a shift. I'd say that Aviation Week really likes technology stories. So, for example, I wrote a piece on the eclipse, but I focused on the test of this very cool polarization camera, which is going to be one of the scientists is going to try out during this eclipse. It's a way of seeing the way the light is polarized in the corona without having to go through this kind of cumbersome 15-second process to determine electron density. So I think with Aviation Week, there's a lot of detail that my editors at Reuters would sometimes take out. I wouldn't go into that much detail on there, but there's always science should be reachable to everyone, and I always feel like if my 82-year-old parents and my 25-year-old son can't understand my story, no matter where it's published, I haven't done my job.
Irene, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Irene Klotz is space editor for Aviation Week and Space Technology. You can follow Irene on Twitter at @free_space. For Update One, I'm Adam Cano.
You have been listening to Update One, a production of the National Press Club's Broadcast Committee. You can comment on this show or any episode of Update One by going to facebook.com/PressClubDC or on Twitter @PressClubDC. Thanks for listening to Update One.